This is Red Ice Radio, a beacon of sanity from Northern Europe. RedIceCreations.com.
Welcome back, folks. If you are tuning in for the first time, thank you for your interest. We try to make it worthwhile, and we value the time that you want to spend listening to our programs. So we do put the guest and the topic at the center to be able to hear what they have to say and let them present their ideas and research so that you can make a decision whether or not to proceed to read more and learn more about their work. We highlight, of course, many different subjects for this very reason. We try to keep a varied palette and a broad spectrum. Please go to redicecreations.com to find out more. Some of you have asked to hear Richard Allen Miller on our program, and so today here he is with us. He's a physicist, herbalist, horticulturalist, author of 7 books, and a former special skills trainer for the U.S. Navy SEALs. Miller began his work as an original Black Ops team member in the quote-unquote X-Files world of Navy Intel in the late 60s. Miller is the author of numerous foundational papers, including A Holographic Concept of Reality and Embryonic Holography. He shares his experiences, conclusions, and insider info from his days as an A-team physicist working for the military. And Richard also explains how our non-local minds work in this holographic concept of reality. All right. Hello there, everybody, and welcome here. We have an interesting guest with us lined up, Richard Allen Miller. Thank you for talking with us today. Glad to have you aboard with us, Richard. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure.
Some of our listeners wrote to us, of course, and they wanted to hear more from you on our program. People have been very excited so far about many of the things you've been talking about, so we're glad to be able to do this. Now, let's cover your background, first of all. Let's assume we don't that everybody has caught up and heard some of the other shows out there you've done already. And I don't want to rush past anything interesting here as well, since there are many different aspects we can discuss here. And we can always do a part two, if necessary, at a later time, Richard. But let's begin at the beginning. I heard you talk about your high school project you did in 1961.
Yeah. I, in 1960 and 1961, I was a junior and senior in high school. My junior year science fair project was titled A New Meson Field Theory. And basically what it was out of Yukawa's work from Japan, I had proposed a new concept of a particle called a muon that would create a tachyon factory. And it was just a mathematical paper. Yes, I was one of those kind of kids writing math in an early age. Then in my senior year, I built a linear accelerator with a hydrogen bubble chamber and created, I was the first American in 61 to create Cherenkov radiation, or particles going faster than the speed of light. Now, in 64, I won the Navy Cruiser Awards for both of those things. And that means I got to go down to San Diego in a Seabee and get on the Seawolf and go to Hawaii underwater as the first nuclear-powered submarine. I got to do that as a high school kid. And that was the prize. But what they did is they used my Meson field theory on the Mariner 1 in 64 to beam tachyons down at Mars, and then they measured, using Cherenkov radiation, the speed of light changing for the optical difference and the speed of light in water. And that was what determined that there was water on Mars. Today, it gets better. It's not even about me. It gets better. The new discoveries in this last month is that water on there's more water on Mars than there is water on Earth. It is a new form of water called structured water. Structured waters have to do with deuterium, tritium, and you know, H7O9. It's the different structuring that can happen because of a dipole moment. That is our first molecule in the set of molecules down there in the periodic chart where you have a dimensional gate. And with that occurs a new kind of water that it's at 100 degrees below Fahrenheit. It is liquid slush. And that's probably because of the pressures and the variations in atmospheric conditions. Who knows what we're about to discover in that regard? what I did is on my website, I had a picture of the Earth and I had a picture of the moon and I had a little ball of water on how much water represents in volumetrics, you know, to the Earth and moon. And you got a comparison. And, you know, the water on the Earth is a little smaller than the moon by maybe half. And then I bring a fourth ball in on the water on Mars and it's bigger.
Interesting. Now, what do you think? Is this water is different? I've heard that it has everything from health benefits to can be used in different ways on humans, structured water. Do you know if that's correct?
Yes. Dr. Jerry Pollack is the individual. He's professor emeritus now that, Matti Pitkinen and Alex Kavarainen. They were two Finnish physicists that first started the mathematical concepts of structured waters out of Finland. And Jerry is at the University of Washington, Department of Anesthesiology, was my lead when I worked military. He was not my boss. He was my lead. I reported to him and we both did work for Dr. Ray Fink, who was under John Bonica. And that goes way back. Delgado is in the labs there.
Oh, wow.
Jerry was doing work with water even then. And today, if you go online, you can see he has two beakers that are approximately 16 inches apart. He's able to somehow move water out of one beaker over to the other beaker using surface tension so that it doesn't break the line. And he's showing you the nature of what structured waters are possibly about. How they affect health and dosimetry in the body, those parts are being studied now. But really, if you take a look, right now our technologies acknowledge the point of 8.4 for your pH is where you no longer take water out of your bone marrow when you're drinking it. That's why drinking soda is so toxic.
Sure.
Not even about the sugar.
Yeah.
It's about the pH. And when you get further, you know, what are these devices now that'll take them down to 9 or 11 pH, real high end. Those aren't as important in what we understand for ATP, adenosine triphosphate, you know, some of the important, chemistries in the body. That, by the way, ATP is where cold fusion occurs. If you look at the molecule, it's a quark gluon plasma. That is absolutely out of Roger Penrose. You can prove it. And it's like a quark gluon plasma has not even existed in our time frame. It was like maybe 1/10 of the first second of the creation of the universe. I had a quark gluon plasma, and then the particles started to mutate. This was what I used to write about, is these differences between mesons and elementary particles. My original thesis was that it was a new meson, and that is now incorrect. Just to make sure that everybody understands I'm not that great, it is now considered an elementary particle and is the primary particle that will allow cold fusion processes to occur.
All right. Very interesting. I want to get back to another point as well that I heard you talk about. And later, of course, I want to get into synthetic telepathy or computer brain interfaces, because
yeah,
that's obviously has to do with some of the work you did with Delgado and everything.
Imagine that.
But let's get back and talk about your education. Was it Pierre S. DuPont that paid for it, I heard you say?
They had, it was old man DuPont himself. Basically, I went to work for IPD, Instrument Products Division out of Newark, Delaware, and then spent most of my time at the Experimental Research Station in Wilmington and working under old man DuPont. That's where I encountered a holographic concept of reality. It hit me then when I met Gaber. But I was at the University of Delaware. They hired me to work as a physicist, and then they sent me to graduate school. And I went to work for a little-known professor, Dr. R. B. Murray, who was a Nobel Prize winner for developing the next stages in solid-state physics, ranging from originally it was monolithic circuits, and then it took a whole new dimension because of some work I'd done at Pullman, Washington State University. I worked under a when I was in undergraduate school, they had brought this professor in from England. He was a little known English professor. He chaired the Department of Physics at Washington State University. His name was Raymond Band. And what he had done is written a book called Mathematical Physics, which discusses event horizon, precursor waves, and the concept of time domain reflectometry and some of the stuff we use in solid state physics. Mostly, I think we were reverse engineering technology that had come from somewhere else. I don't know. I know that I watched when I was at MIT, I watched a change. And Corning had developed a whole different kind of computer system using NOR-NAND logic, which later will be called object-oriented. And they used Schmidt triggers and puffs of air with little pieces of glass that were stacked on each other so that you could gate information one way or another with little puffs of air. They were perfect for space, whereas it would almost appear like solid-state physics was leaving flintlocks in a rainy period, because solid-state physics is extremely previous to to gamma rays and cosmic rays, you know, running mm-hmm. through the universe.
Sure.
You know, they damage them, color centers, things like that. And so the half-life of a computer in space is like 8 years. On Earth, it's about 8 years. That's why certain chips now can't be used in accounting systems because of your checksum error functions and things like that. And interesting.
And so this to you means potentially that this discovery came from somewhere else originally?
Well, I don't know. You know, it's interesting to watch missing links in man.
Sure, yeah.
And, yeah, as a metaphor. Yeah, yeah, there's missing links in technology sometimes. Hmm. Just like there, yeah. And where? How did this go from here to there? You know, what was the normal thing? There were a lot of things like that. That was when Lucent Technologies came out of Sandia and Bell Labs, and they were all going crazy with fiber optics and that concept. Interesting stuff. I was just a young kid playing with toys. And old man DuPont was basically, he was in charge of technology for the universe, and he reported to Rockefeller. Now, that's the way I remembered the hierarchy. Today, Monsanto was a little tiny company under DuPont, one of them. It was a weapons company, to be precise, making 2,4-D, Paraquat, and later Agent Orange. But now, it's Monsanto is huger than DuPont. DuPont's lesser. Hmm. It's like Monsanto became its own universe. Check that out. That's an interesting rise to something or other in terms of what the secret different things are about the New World Order. I don't understand any of that. I'm just more a nerd, you know. I know the physics part, and I can see there are missing links on how they went from here to there, and often wonder, you know, like Trojan horses. You know, you don't, if the way Carl Sagan would have put it, do aliens really exist? Well, how could they not? Because your imagination is reality. And that's literally the assumed truths most of us in science now pursue. It's an assumed truth, you know, that it all starts inside and that the physical world is an illusion. It really, I can do some mathematical expressions on that if you want to pursue that. It's, you know, arguments. And time and space aren't real either. What we're really dealing with is information and the resolution of information. And we normally will call those memes, like you would physical plane, emotional plane, intellectual plane, archetypal plane. You have these memes, or the way you organize information around time, which is a duration of consciousness. It's a way you wrap your proteins with two brains and a little bottleneck down there.
What does this have to do with your holographic concept of reality? Does this play into that?
Well, okay. When I was working as a graduate student at in Delaware, I walked down the hall and I looked in this one lab, and there was an active, accurate, working three-dimensional color TV. I saw it. That's in 1967. A guy named Gaber was working it. And I had this revelation that what a hologram could be defined as is n dimensions of information in n minus one dimensions. It was the way information folds into or out of itself. And I can go into a quantum universe with Bose-Einstein condensate and show you an argument on how a Bose-Einstein condensate would be consistent in a holographic system. That's where you have these two particles. That was last year's Nobel Prize. You have these two particles at opposite ends of the universe, and when this particle goes up, this one moves over that way, and this one goes down, it moves back that way. And somehow they were able to prove that the two particles were somehow at opposite ends of the universe were simply connected. And that became the Bose-Einstein condensate. Now, in a holographic system, you could see it as a single particle with two cameras on it. And you're looking at different, you're confusing the planes. This is physical and that's emotional, or as a metaphor. And that in a system where you can see Heisenberg and his uncertainty principle and the quantum mechanical thing led to the two primaries of what a quantum universe would be about, which is entanglement and decoherence. Whereas in a holographic system, and these are just models, that means it doesn't mean they're right. There are ways for us to explain what we have observed so that we can then find solutions that would not necessarily be self-evident and lead to discovery, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And what we do is we create these little universes, and then we try to do like Hilbert space, and then come back into real world math with approximations. And that's how quantum mechanics worked and why Heisenberg had an uncertainty principle, because he was looking at space-time, whereas those are subsets of something way more fundamental in information. And so with information, that would suggest that if you knew how to listen to yourself, for example, this is one of the tools I developed for Navy SEALs, was make them Superman. It's called Critical Decision-Making Power Tools. And what you do is you learn how to go into listen to your gut, because if you use your higher brain, you're going to have options. Mm-hmm. Merlin, anything that's specifically forbidden is mandatory. That means if there's a possibility, it becomes self-prophesizing, usually based on your nooks and crannies and scars from childhood. You know, you'll make yourself fail.
That is a really interesting concept, though, because if you think about it and what drives reality today, I would say media and movies to a certain extent, I can't help to wonder how much that also then programs our reality, actually creating the scenarios that we collectively fear, Richard.
There you go. Now you're starting to get the idea of what a matrix might imply. I have just recently on my blog, I have a blog section, I update maybe 7 or 8 things a day. And on there, yesterday is a blog regarding the nature of scintillating waves in space and what is and is not reality. You know, my model, on this new book I'm writing, The Non-Local Mind in a Holographic Universe, would suggest that the brain is a four-dimensional hologram of 5 space. That means you can change the movie. That's why all saints in history have suggested the importance of training the mind using meditation to allow to control it, mm-hmm. and its thoughts, you know. And that's why, because you know, the reason we're probably all enjoying this current movie, what is it, Horror on Elm Street,
there, right?
That's a good movie. Is because of the way we were birthed, brought into the world in the first place, and you set up resonance with certain kinds of engrams like noradrenaline, serotonin, when he whacked you, and then he took you away from mom to fingerprint you, and then he imagine the trauma of some aware soul trying to sample that universe and what it must make and think about it.
The first thing, yeah, exactly, we come out, and I can just imagine how sensitive the nerve system is at that stage as well. Completely brand new, right? And then
brand
you get
new.
Smacked
yeah,
around.
And, like, and you don't have any sacred geometry yet. What if sacred geometry could be metaphorically exposed? Larry called them neurologic circuits. There's specific geometries that suggest the way information might be stored one way over another. And so Leary suggested there were 8 basic neurologic circuits, and they were responsible for our integration of evolving our consciousness. And that was what it was all about. And he had specific chemistries, like lysergic acid, amide. Yeah. That is the chemistry in the brain that connects dots. That's when you go, what Crowley would have said, aha, you know, that a moment of netter-new, that connecting of one point to another. And the interesting thing is, in my model, it says that connecting dots is arbitrary because the brain is a 4-dimensional hologram of 5 space, kind of like the Jet Li in the One. There are all different kinds of you out there. All possibilities. That's the way the saints would put it.
Right, and we choose every nanosecond and where to go.
that's the last part of my last book's chapter 8 is the difference between free will and true will. Mm. And then, of course, I also include an ontology of mystical states by John Curtis Gowan, so that you have a roadmap, knowing where you are.
Okay, I see. Now, speaking about controlling the mind, our own mind, does this work, do you think, then on an individual level only, or do we collectively create the movie? We
can talk well, of that. Course, Buckminster Fuller, synergy. You know, the power of the group is greater than the sum of the individual parts. You could be sitting in a center of a circle, and they all thought you had green glue cancer, and watch what happens. You know, so, I mean, really, I mean, you sit there and mutate down into green glue. And because the group is actually creating what we'll call the numinous or the collective unconscious, or, you know, we've got a bunch of names for it, myth, mythology. It happens on layers of the information. And so, yeah, to everybody sitting there and go, kumbaya at the same time, and the world turns into a big flower. Yeah, probably.
Hmm. But we haven't seen that happen. I mean, it's pretty tightly structured. There's not much, how should we put it?
Well, that's because there's probably some elders in the church that are outside holding the body of the church into focus.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
As metaphor again.
With the intention of keeping it within certain boundaries.
Yeah, well, look, let's try it this way. Man does not have rights. He has responsibilities.
I agree.
If you want to be free, you know, then nobody's going to give that to you. You're going to have to go out and earn it. Okay, well, the same thing is true when I say, this is an old Indian saying, man has a responsibility for the thoughts he chooses to entertain.
Right.
And so if that thought came from you or something else, that inner voice, that's some of the things we could do with synthetic telepathy. We could fool you, thinking that you were talking to yourself, and in fact, someone else was talking to you.
Let's talk a little bit about what your work, I guess, what that has been turned into, if it's been implemented into something. We can talk about technology, certainly, and also realizations, but why don't we talk about synthetic telepathy and computer brain interfaces a little bit? Some of the work that Delgado, I guess, spearheaded, right? And did you pick up on this?
Well, he did chip implants. He was in the lab next. Before he went to Yale, he was in the lab next to me. That's where I was. I was Spook Central with Dr. Moore and another lab doing ketamine, telepathine, and BZ. And I was doing the microwave studies. And what? And then I also was Northwest Regional Director of MRU. That means I was under Dr. Carl Schleicher. He was... And the movie's called The Smoking Man. He's the guy that smoked a lot of cigarettes, sat in the same desk on Wisconsin Avenue for 48 years. How does that work?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very interesting. Huh? Now, MRU still exists, by the way. It's called Mankind Research Unlimited. It is the front door for Navy intelligence and the paranormal studies that we did. And I did everything up and down the West Coast. Bill Franklin, Dr. Wilbur Franklin, was my counterpart at Kent State working out of Chicago. And then we both reported to Dr. Carl Schleicher. And I was handed up this thing from Alan Frey. He had made a discovery at Willow Grove that it would appear that man had another sensory motor input. Basically, how the device worked was their temporal lobes are sensitive to microwave. And when a certain bandwidth, 0.3 to 3 gigahertz, was beamed at the temporal lobes, it caused them to heat up slightly, ring, and then you could heterodyne voices on the synthetic telepathy so that you could actually hear them in your head without it going through ear function. How does that all work? Well, I wrote a paper including biological amplification processes in the body because my expertise is in resonant physics. I'm a resonant physicist. That means I deal with voice of the planet, Schumann's resonance, and how it relates to brainwaves.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to return to that later, but go ahead, Richard.
Yeah. But synthetic telepathy gave us a communications device. This was even before HARP. In the event we needed to talk to somebody and, you know, have them hear us, how could you do that? Well, we could use this tight beam, 0.3 to 3 gigahertz, heterodyne voices on it, and you hear them in your head. Well, then, of course, after that, it took a myriad direction of changes to include cloning emotions. We'll talk about that in a moment. And a variety of other weapons-like applications instead of hearing for the impaired or whatever. That would have been the first medical application. Haven't seen that yet in the 30 years. What cloning emotions is that when you are, let's say you have someone that is like in Dreamscape where you're going to photograph their memory and you do it with a P300 wave when they're extremely depressed. And then you put that back onto a tight beam, which means you broadcast it and instill depression in everybody that's in the way of it. And that was and I'm using depression because it could be a lot of other things done. Remember the first Iraqi war, the first Bush, when he went in, and basically everybody standing around, there was two or three GIs with their little M16s or something, and hundreds of Iraqi came out of the bunkers and dropped their weapons down. How does that work?
Yeah.
Well, that was called Commander Solo. And Commander Solo is a single aircraft. It's the first ordnance that is used in any war now, including Afghanistan. When I came out, I was coming out of Canada when we went into Afghanistan on our reprisal from the false flag of 9/11. And the top of the list, you know, they talk about the different airplanes, aircraft, and the different bombs, and the different bullets, and the different ordnance. And the top one, Commander Solo, and that's a single plane with a large, usually at that time, it's probably better now with supercomputers, but they would heterodyne network 360 computers to form a supercomputer. I think it's 358. I don't know what the algorithm is, but you know, it's they tandem them in such a manner. The way they crunch information becomes a supercomputer. And that's how you handled heterodyning a P300 wave.
And by the way, Richard, heterodyning, that's basically when you combine different frequencies, correct?
Right. Yeah. Right. You have a microwave band, and then on top of it, you have an audio band.
Okay.
Yes, correct. Yes. And that's basically how it all worked. And what they do is put a P300 wave on there of someone depressed or wanting to have a cup of coffee and, you know, relax and, you know, come on out of the bunker. Nobody's going to shoot you and we don't want to fight, you know, give up. How did the Borg put it? Resistance is futile.
That's right. Yeah.
Something like that.
So that's what they were doing, you're saying? That they beamed these...
Yeah, that's a weapon. That it works. And they did it on Branch Davidians. They used it on a bunch of people. It's used now even in crowd control where they can actually...
Sure, yeah.
Yeah,
it's a
disperse crowds.
That's right. Kind of a super weapon. I've heard that they can manage to get people to throw up and everything.
Weapon.
Right?
It's the next weapon. That's 40 years ago technology. Yeah. Imagine what Monsanto's doing today. I mean, that gets really over the edge.
Really crazy. And I want to talk about that later too.
They're attacking levels of your consciousness that you're not in touch with. They're doing it purposefully because they know you're not in touch with it. And so what do? You become a Walmart shopper. Mindless. I'm kidding.
Most are today, aren't they, anyway?
There's something going on there. I can't tell you. It's gene pool.
The zombification of mankind, right? That's what they're talking about.
I don't
now.
Know. It's scary stuff for me. I'm an old fart now, and I watch this stuff, and I can't believe why people would think shopping at Walmart is such a cool thing to do.
It isn't.
I've written, is it about money? Cheap. Everything costs something, and money doesn't mean anything. That's zeitgeist moving forward. We've had 400 years of currency. Doesn't work. It's time to move on. And what are the options? Barter. Other kinds of possibilities. I have my own mission statements around things like that, food and so on. But, I have to tell you, synthetic telepathy is now being used as an everyday. I think Target stores used it to stop shoplifting and then revoked it because it was catching a lot of flack. It actually did reduce shoplifting, And Walmart is talking about a place in the center of their store called the Center, where if you, on your own volition, step inside the circle, you can experience all the store specials going on in your head.
Wonderful.
How's that for a new world?
Oh, that's awesome. Now, you sent me a graph, by the way, if you will, kind of a diagram of synthetic telepathy. And I looked at this thing correctly. The last delivery, it's done by a satellite in this case.
Yeah,
is that correct?
That's the newest stuff. I'm not privy to that. That's new technology that they've implemented on technology I developed in the 70s. What you're looking at is 2010. That paper was from 2010. You can go on Wikipedia and you can read about it and have all the different links and so on. That is a new application. Another one that the feds use all the time in a movie called The Siege was through-wall surveillance using microwave.
Mm-hmm.
That's another application of it, through-wall surveillance. They'll have a little van that sits outside the hotel listening to drug deals going down two floors up.
Wasn't the problem, I've read about this, and the problem was that the engine to generate the microwaves was so huge, they couldn't even fit it in a van, correct? Or is that better now, these days?
Oh, yeah, that part's easy. The microwave bands are actually low amplitude. It doesn't require a lot of generation. So I'm not sure what your reference is, because, in fact, 0.3 to 3 gigahertz is verging on quantum mechanical levels. That's way down there. And way down, the difference between one orbital and another in an atom, microwave band. And 0.3 gigahertz. That's okay. And so when you're talking about that low a frequency, it's low amplitude. It takes essentially nothing to start your temporal lobes ringing. What they do is they heat up just slightly and then they ring. And when they ring, they now are like liquid crystal phases or amorphous semiconductors, and they can receive all kinds of information. And I don't believe we have even begun to explore the nature of so-called things like inner voice.
Mm-hmm.
And what we define what your inner voice is and what it is not. And so with that, that's where I say your first defense is not wrapping your head with aluminum foil.
Right.
Yeah, really, man, that was great. No, it is basically taking responsibility for the thoughts, paranoia, whatever, the thoughts you choose to entertain. Because in fact, it was my great-grandfather that actually said, we are no longer at war in the world, that if you wish to change the world, the only way you can do that is changing yourself, and so the world will change with you.
Yeah, yeah.
It starts one person at a time. Small steps, Allie. That's the way it is.
So we can override this no matter how advanced and strong the technology is.
Dionne Fortune, remember? She, out of Golden Dawn, she wrote a book called Psychic Self-Defense. And yeah, it's your mind is what is creating. That's how voodoo works. That's how it all works. Magic is the art of changing consciousness at will. And so one of the mindsets that I use is that everything happens for a reason. Everything leads to something better. And you approach the universe with those two assumed truths and watch what happens next.
In your view, Richard, have we gotten any closer to, I guess, solving the mystery of our consciousness or even understanding that?
No.
Yet?
We haven't even begun. And in fact, it was Rudolf Steiner that said that man is currently devolving.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're not like Greece. Or certainly places like Prague and Europe used to be like with high arts and scholarship, education, and the importance of arts like piano and, music.
Sure.
The importance of that kind of, that's all.
It's gone.
It's kind of bad.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It's changing, and it seems like there is a degeneration here. What about the brain? If we separate that from the consciousness, do we even understand the brain at this stage?
No. In fact, the brain is like a large crystal sitting on top of a body, which is the antenna. And the antenna has DNA, and so the DNA is a three-dimensional hologram of four space. That means who you were, who you are, who you will be, and then on top is this crystal. It's constantly changing, right? Predicated on where you choose to set up your witnessing or observation of the reality, predicates what reality you have. Literally, that's why meditation is so important, because it takes you to bliss states. That's what Persinger et al. Have shown in their data, absolutely, that someone that's been meditating for 30 years has this kind of a brain action, which is different than normal people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what I did was I sat back and I said, shit, I haven't meditated for that many years, and I want to still have that same kind of brain. How can I do that? And that's when I came up with my toys, the power tools I developed for Navy SEALs. These are biofeedback, brain drivers, virtual audio technologies. There's all kinds of things. They're toys. Now, like all toys, they're like shortcuts through the forest to grandma's house. And there are big bad wolves. That's why Aleister Crowley died as a drug addict. That's why Madame Curie died with radiation poisoning. When we don't totally understand or define what's going on yet, there are extreme risks. And really, most of our society today would ban altered states of consciousness as not well-being. Whereas, in fact, God gave us all of these things as places that we can do things we cannot do in conscious state. And the consciousness is just one part of a bigger set of consciousnesses of which are actually probably running the show.
Things we cannot do in a conscious state. Can you give me an example of what that would be?
Yeah, like hunches, guesses, working from your gut, where you have a 3-sigma error coefficient that's beyond space and time. Where I took, like, Navy SEALs would come to a fork in the road, and they wanted a protocol that gave them an edge over flipping a coin. Okay, and in a laboratory, I discovered a very specific altered state of consciousness right there. Not over there, not here, but right there. That place, your ability in guessing increases 400 times over where you are in conscious state. And let me give you an example. When I teach these ESP induction through forms of self-hypnosis, this is my first book that's out available right now. What I'm doing is when I teach the workshop, the first thing I do is I measure your baseline. And there was a woman from New York that got 6 out of 20. Average, the statistical was 5 out of 20 because there were 4 variables. And so we do the different variables. And if you guessed 5 of them correctly, you're average. She had 6. At the end of the session, I test everybody again, and she was typical. She had 18 out of 20. That's paranormal. Mm. And that means that you already have information inside you of knowing what to do. It's how do you get past consciousness and its little whiny brat kid that has a scar that might create, like, listen, when I pour coffee, I create a thought that, gosh, if I pick that cup up, I might drop it because the coffee's too hot.
Yeah.
And what happens next is a self-prophesizing. It happens because I thought it could happen. And what you do in this state is you go to your gut, which is a lower brain. You do it, it's convoluted, has lots of neurotransmitters. It's all right there. And you do a lot of thinking from there. Dogs do. Feed me. You know, they work from their gut. Well, that's how they are. They strictly, you know, working straightly and what's up for food.
And you feel that
Why
too.
Why does my dog love me better, you better than me? I feed it bacon, you know. There it is. And what if you learn how to listen to your inner voice, it's like biofeedback. It knows what to do, and it will not necessarily allow, let's say, some neurotic thing you have about trying to please your father that will cause you to fail, which is what we all are doing. We're self-defeating because of our ego.
Someone said, Richard, that the brain doesn't understand don't or not. So you can't think about what you can't do or not do.
They call that neuro-linguistic programming. It's certain ways the brain captures the information or not. And if you get into the meme model, now you can talk to yourself in certain kinds of languages that are better dialogue. You know, that a lot of Indian tribes would suggest that you have more reality in a dream state and dream time than you do in conscious state. Hopi, Aborigines, they all call it dream time, and it's more real. Why? Because the emotional plane is the physical plane with more detail. That's really what we call a meme. It's the way the information expands out or folds in on itself. And when you look at it that way, time and space are like what Lawrence Lashon, same period as Andrea Pujarric, wrote a book called The Medium, The Mystic, and The Physicist. And it was about space, time, and ego being the three grand illusions.
Hmm. Previously, you mentioned ads at Walmart and also Commander Solo. But in that context, do you know of any agencies or even military that are at this stage are developing this synthetic telepathy to basically manipulate the masses on a huge scale?
Well, they tried it with HARP. That's where you wanted me to go. Esalen contacted me. They started using the 0.3 to 3 gigahertz as the microwave band that they would do at HARP. And then, of course, immediately they put a second HARP down in Adelaide, you know, diametrically polar opposite so they could beam the entire Earth. You know, it's great. Didn't work.
Why not?
It didn't work.
What happened?
Well, and nobody got depressed or, you know, went out and shopped at Walmart.
look at the world, Richard.
I'm just using it as a metaphor. You know, I wouldn't want to get too serious here. It didn't work. What did work was that it could alter weather. To my knowledge, they have not gotten it down where it's a fine tooth. And really, what the global event we're currently all enjoying, literally, with Hurricane Sandy and all the rest of it, is most likely the Earth isolating the infection. In other words, we have messed up with some of the cycles. The cycles are now readjusting themselves, and in doing so, will limit mankind. You know, this drought we had this last summer on our corn crops is going to seriously adversely affect Africa and Asia this spring. There will be, I'm guessing, starvation, the likes of which this earth has never seen in recorded history. Further, UNESCO doesn't even have the supplies to even partially address this rising crisis. And yet, nobody is talking about it. Not even Al Jazeera. I don't get it. You know, I guess my filters and what I see as important is quite different than what the media thinks about Petraeus and his, you know, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the concern with that high of an official in election, you know, walking one's talk. That's what a magician is only as strong as his word. And good luck, because there's all kinds of red herrings out there.
Sure, yeah.
They'll do it on purpose to you, too.
Well, exactly. It's the same thing as with Bill Clinton, and they focus in on these scandals, you know?
Yeah, above the law. Yeah.
Now,
but she didn't swallow. So,
so it's okay. Define what is. All right. Well, let's talk about.
Sorry about that, honey. That was fun, though. I love doing you like that.
Yeah.
I catch you off guard.
Now,
Clinton was. You know, Clinton was. He was actually a pretty good president, as some things would go. And Hillary and I. You know, I don't even understand that kind of a relationship at all. That's very weird for me. You know, trying to, friendships are the highest form of love there is. You should always try to hold, be slow to give your word, be quick to keep it.
All right, let's see here. Many things to go over. Let's go back to the starvation issue, and this will later on. I think we should also more in detail get into that in the second hour, Richard. We're going to take a break in a little while here. But Monsanto, bring on the offer the solution to the scene, right? Ta-da, Monsanto is going to be your option here in the food crisis.
Maybe and maybe not. There are some serious concerns about GMOs and how they are affecting our planet. I know that Europe, there are certain countries that have banned those GMOs, like corn, and then, quote, it escaped.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, how does that work?
It's in the biosphere, right? And it takes over. It's I mean, it's classified as an insecticide and a pesticide, and it gets into the other normal crop fields and takes over, right? Just continues to grow.
Well, the Roundup that I remember, glyphosate, the way it worked was it was called a translocator. That means it went down into the root. That means it took 4 to 6 days to get down there, gravity. That's what it takes, you know, gravity to get down to the roots, and then stops the photosynthesis process from the roots up. And that's how Roundup, why it doesn't work if you get rain, you know, wash it away, break it down into inorganic salts. When you splice it into the gene of a seed, now I have no idea what that might imply, except that if people, why would they lobby against it for labeling? What is the motive on that? There's, you know, whenever there's smoke, there's usually some reason for that. It's called composting. And that's bacterial action. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Monsanto was originally a weapons company. And the fact that they got first into seed and took control of the seed banks and then moved into GMOs, where they were altering the things so it couldn't grow from seed, that's like trying to control our food chain so that, you know, take our weapons away from us. All kinds of metaphor there come to mind.
Yeah. Think about that as a good point. Again, the company that originally manufactured DDT, PCBs, Agent Orange, now goes into crops
Paraquat,
and food.
Yeah, all of them. Yeah, they did all of it. That was like weapons for defoliants in war.
Yeah.
It wasn't about doing good. And it was used as a weapons company. And then when they switched and became a pharmaceutical house instead of a weapons company, by the way, that's what they were. It was a weapons company under DuPont, and now there are more.
Did you do any work on the GMO things?
No. Mine was always in paranormal. The work I did for DuPont was, we were A-team. Whenever they ran across something that normals couldn't figure out, then they would bring in A-team. Mostly, we caught flies. Our mouths were open in disbelief. We never figured it out either. But you know, and the A-team was never just one or two people like in X-Files. It was mostly there were eight or nine of us. I was usually lead because I was a physicist, but once in a while they'd have an anthropologist or someone like that that would be the lead, like if we're going into the territories or Antarctica or someplace. You know, I have seen things. I, you know, have a sense of, you know, disinformation and where it's all starting and why. Spin, that's what counterintelligence means, is writing the spin on something so that it is misleading. I have no idea whether Roswell happened. I would think that shooting down an alien spacecraft is impossible.
Why?
Well, their advanced technology would be like shooting down God.
Okay.
You know, by definition, you know, and look at how much further we are in just 100 years of technology. Where do you think the aliens are?
Sure.
Especially since, okay. With that said, you know, it's a I think I have a friend up in Sandpoint that suggested it was a Trojan horse, leaving technology that would limit us in terms of how quickly we could evolve. In fact, it would seem opposite, but in fact, you know, we had Y2K. The person before me in Navy intelligence was a WAC. I was the whiz kid for a while, but before me was this WAC, and what she did was invent COBOL as a backdoor to the possibilities of our gating systems crashing and burning because of the year 2000. Had to do with binary systems.
Okay.
That's what Y2K was always about. They were afraid that everything was going to crash and burn because of the way binary works. And that's one of the reasons why COBOL was invented by this WAC. If she did it before me, that I remember looking at her work. That was who beat me, by the way, in the science fair projects. Robert Strom with UNIVAC. Mm-hmm. Even though my Navy liked my experiments, UNIVAC was even better. There's a kid, Robert Strom from New York. Thing with relays.
Interesting. Now, you know, before we take a break here, Rich, I want to give you an opportunity to mention websites and books again, everything. But Spooky Miller, right? How did we want to talk about that a little bit.
You can call me Rick.
Okay. No, but I want to ask you about how the you know, we have the X-Files team, right? Behind this is Chris Carter, Frank Spotsnitz. They're at the 1013 production company.
Fox paid for it all. We did the original workups for Fox, but they ended up working with Chris. And then, of course, I didn't want to live in Hollywood. And then, of course, we went up into British Columbia on set once in a while to advise on the way something would be from the military point of view. At that time, I had top secret clearance with vault permits.
Tell us how this communication began, Richard, in the beginning. Did they approach you? Or how did this happen?
Seal Corporation contacted me. Seal Corp. And wanted me to do some work with biofeedback and ESP to help make super soldiers. And so it was later called SEAL, Navy SEALs, but originally it was called SEAL Corporation out of Amherst. My handler was, right now he's still alive, he's doing virtual architecture on the East Coast.
They're the one who got you involved in letting information to the X-Files team.
I started working for Boeing. Boeing, even though I had just my master's, they hired me as a doctorate, brought me back to Seattle, brought me back home. And I set up shop, had laboratories, and started with strain gauge measurements, and they moved me up into B1 infrared countermeasures. And when Boeing went sideways and lost the B1 contract, they had like 50,000 PhDs hit the streets in one day, and they had a big sign in Seattle: "The last one out, please turn off the lights." On a big poster. And what happened was I was one of the few that they bumped me down from being a supervisor to an engineer or physicist, but I was like, you know, engineer level. And I gave my job to someone that had worked under me that was he had been GS 12 or 14. He was a GS 14, that's right. Way been, you know, and it was old, would never be able to find work again. And I gave him my job, and then a University of Washington just hired me on the spot. And this is with 50,000 people, you know, looking for work. And I had no trouble. I just started working at the UW and in anesthesiology. And that's when I had, you know, Secure Labs. And that's when I met Delgado and Moore and some of the others that were already set up shop there. And I think Delgado went to Yale after that. And that's when he started working with human implants rather than monkeys. Mm-hmm. I have pictures. I have pictures of him in his lab from my old days when I worked there. So, you know, just it's interesting. Seattle actually changed. They had a place there called the Boeing Scientific Research Laboratories over in South Park. And that place had more PhDs than even DuPont's Wilmington Experimental Research Station. It was huge. And came out of that was, I worked there for a period on Lunar Base Alpha 1. I was a physicist in charge of light. And so I learned how to grow marijuana in space. That's where the original studies came out of, 1970. Huh. We took, yeah, cannabis indica. I have a friend in Amsterdam. He runs the marijuana museum and says I'm always welcome. There is a drug celebrity in Amsterdam.
Why did they want to grow marijuana in space?
Well, you know, altered states, altered Walter.
Oh, really? Know. Okay. All righty. Well, there we go. We have much more to discuss and wean out, as it were. But let's talk about your books a little bit and then give out your website as well.
Sure. Okay. Well, my latest book out is ESP Induction Through Forms of Self-Hypnosis. These are the protocols on how to talk to your gut and may save your life someday. That they're what they're doing now. Matt Stein, he wrote when disaster strikes, when technology fails, he and I do these two-day workshops where he will go in and armor everybody with what kinds of go bags you want, what do you want in your go bag, and then what I do is teach you how to make critical decision-making power tools as used by Navy SEALs. What I do is I teach you how to listen to your gut. It's a one-day seminar, a two-day urban survival skills. And the new book that I'm just on my computer right this minute going to press in the next 2 weeks is called Power Tools for the 21st Century. And these are the 8 protocols that I developed for Navy SEALs that made them Superman. And there's a variety of different things in there. I'm talking about mythic living and how to change a belief system like you would a pair of clothing. And we can talk about that later. And then, of course, that's all published by Nick Begich with Earth Pulse Press. He's the one that did Angels Don't Play This Harp and does the harp work out of Alaska. His younger brother is, I think, junior senator from the state of Alaska. Nick's my publisher and best friend. And basically, I have other books. I've been writing for 40 years, so I've got books out. One previously out is called The Modern Alchemist, on Jungian psychotherapy, on personal transformation, because I've always been more than just a physicist. I'm metaphysics, beyond physics. In other words, my worldview is broader. Like, I'm a satsangi. I've initiated the Sharon Singh, and I try not to eat anything with a face or grandparents, and I meditate. You know, I'm trying to be good, training the mind. Inner Traditions published 3 of my books on the Magical and Ritual Use series. The Magical and Ritual Use of Herbs, I assigned rituals to 28 herbs, which kept them out of the Uniform Controlled Substance Act. And that's why kola nut and betel nut and ephedra are legal. Psychedelic mushrooms like psilocybin and peyote, because I assigned rituals making sacraments. And essentially what it did is it kept the government from being able to regulate and put them under a uniform control substance. Then I wrote Magical and Ritual Use of Aphrodisiacs, which was on techniques around sex magic, which is what I, you know, is one of the things that I write books about. The Masonic secret goes something like, the thought that occurs at the moment of climax happens. That's why you got to be very careful with your thoughts while you're having sex, because that's like voodoo. Those emotional charges will create thought forms that will actually go from psyche right into matter. And then the third book was the Magical and Ritual Use of Perfumes. And all three of them are published in a bunch of the languages, German, Portuguese, whatever, through Verlagen and Sphinx and or some of the other larger publishers over there in Europe.
Excellent. Sex Magic. What do you think about Aleister Crowley, by the way? Click here quickly. A pretty misunderstood person.
Well, yeah, Crowley was a genius. He's kind of like Truman Capote. Talked with a little whiny voice like this and was very scholastically oriented. But you have to realize he was in a Victorian period. So the key to getting people's attention was to shock them. Put 666 in his forehead or something. Colin Wilson wrote a really interesting book called The Beast Himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Crowley died as a drug addict in Hastings. And I would remind all that a teacher can only take you as far as they themselves have been. And so that's one of the reasons why you test and seek the most advanced, because that's all the further you're going to be able to go with them. And while I'm not a Crowleyite, I do embrace magic as a higher form of physics. I am a physicist that I'm here to tell you about pathworking, the ability to chart and take control of your own personal evolution. That is, in fact, what magic lodges were all about in centuries in Europe. All of your best scholars in Europe came out of magical schools, all of them, including Shakespeare. And so with that said, scholars, magic took a dive last century when Crowley advocated the use of drugs as a valid form of magic, which it is, but like all shortcuts, have risks. And that's when he wrote Diary of a Drug Fiend, talking about Cefalo and, you know, that kind of thing. You know, he had a little sign over his bed when Alistair was in and when Alice was in, when he's doing cocaine. It's interesting. What I am interested in is the nature of what an altered state is, how it differs from consciousness, and how I might be able to use that in changing the movie. And that
does anything go, in your opinion, to do that, to like open up that barrier of restrictions that we have?
Yeah, it's happening. Everybody's noticing it now. That's why you have all these different people having psychic episodes. Mm-hmm. You know, I forget what that big collider down in Africa where it connected with some alternate universe and said that these two universes are going through each other right at this very moment. That's part of what the Mayan calendar is and why people, some, will notice aberrations. And that's what they call the evolution of consciousness, where there's a stepping up of awarenesses. And people are beginning to notice the discrepancies in what they see visually and what's really going on. How does that expression go? I would not have seen it if I had not believed it. It's a metaphor. Mm. And we create our own reality by our belief systems. And that's one of the things I wanted to talk about, you know, is if you were a very staunch Christian and, you know, and two aliens walked in the door, the big question is, would you be able to see them? Yeah. You know, like in What the Bleep, they talked about the ship on the horizon, and the natives didn't notice the ship because they had no concept of looking at things like that in regard to the ocean. Same thing is true with what we call scalar or demons and angels above men. There's planes of existence with life all through it. The Earth is basically like a quantum computation algorithm. It's Michael Risia. It's got this habitat of viruses and bacteria and little organisms, and they move around, and it creates this habitat that makes it different between Stockholm and Amsterdam. They're like a mentat or a group consciousness, the part you were talking about earlier, that collective unconscious. There's this habitat thing that forms. It's an overview consciousness of where all the deadbeats live and all the red light district is and the blah, you know, like that kind of thing. It lays out a kind of a mentat or consciousness, a city does. And each of us have a similar thing going on with our own body with bacteria. Got millions of these different kinds of bacteria, and they're all vying for homeostasis. And so you have a micro universe going on with this habitat, and everybody's different. You know, you have more of these bacteria, I have more of those, and it's no longer you are what you eat, but more likely you are whom you feed. You know, right? And kind of look at it that way, and you kind of get a sense of how you are unique from the next person in terms of just the level ball field of bacteria that's going on in your body.
Ah, richardallenmiller.com, that's the website. And again, you have a lot of books there. What would you recommend for newcomers to your work? It's vast in many different subjects, but what would you recommend?
A newcomer, you mean barter? I think that rather than privatizing water, that we keep water where it belongs, and we move food to the same category where it becomes a recreational sport. Chief Seattle, or Chief Seattle, in 1857 said, "How can man own the land he lives on? How can he own the air he breathes? We are just here for a brief moment as caretakers. How does one own land? I don't get it." And so food could be like the different qualities of grapes going down, you know, Sweden, you have cultivating grapes or flowers or whatever. And each region has its own uniqueness. These are the kinds of grapes we grow. Or this is the kind of water that we have. And this is the kind of food we have. And then if you want a Dorito corn chip, you can barter with someone else that's making it. Probably Dorito will make more.
All right. Well, let's take a short break here, and you guys out there will have to check out the books that's available, and of course see what you would like to dive into first. Again, the website is richardallenmiller.com, and we'll have that linked up. We'll pick this up when we return. I'm going to talk about Puharich, Superman, other scary tech at the DoD going into transhumanism, yeah, and more maybe on Monsanto and food as well. But we'll be right back, Richard. Stay with us after this break. In the second hour, Richard tells us about an entity that he saw at Groom Lake at Area 51. We'll talk about Mars, Morgellons disease, and a bacteria created by Monsanto. And that's a former weapons company, by the way. And this bacteria can be used to control thoughts. Later, we discuss the Schumann resonance, DMT, ketamine, and changing beliefs to see the affected results. Go to redeyesmembers.com and sign up for a membership to hear more. And a membership will, of course, get you full access to our entire website. If you like what we do, please do consider it. We have a lot of good programs that we think you'll enjoy. Next on Red Eyes Radio, Johan Ollenkamp on The Holy Science. Then we have Eric Karlström on Hurricane Sandy and Weather Control. After this, G. Edward Griffin on The Collectivist Conspiracy. And we have much more scheduled after this. You can find all our upcoming guests in our radio archive on redeyesmembers.com. But right now, we'll proceed with more with Richard Allen Miller.